back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the football season. Crab cakes, we're pushing them to the side, just having them on Friday this week at Costas with Johnny O, and on Sunday before the Ravens and the Chiefs kick off with my man Rob Santoni at Wise Markets, and we're having a wise conversation right now with this guy who is, I love having Daryl Reiter on. He's Right or Wrong Fan. You can find him out on the interwebs, out in Cleveland with the fan out there. But we used to talk baseball, man. There used to be like three times a year we'd get together, do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. The Browns were always drafting either first or second or first or something like that. We would talk about that before and after the draft. But we don't even play the Browns until like it's December, right? So I have to go get Daryl Reiter. I have to get a preview of this Chiefs thing going on here. And, dude, I can see by the bags under your eyes, you were up late hating on the Ravens late Monday night. I know you were.
I did watch the game Monday night, no question about it. You want to talk about one of the great cluster messes of a finish to a football game? That's got to be top five for me, regardless of who won the game. It was just an absolute disaster. You had Lamar and Carr out there hugging, ready to exchange jerseys, and the thing wasn't over yet. Just, oh my goodness. It was a great game.
We had that game with Lynn Elliott. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
With the Browns? I mean, Luke brought that up, and I'm like, oh yeah. I remember, you know, when you've been doing this 26 years and, you know, 16 games, now they have 17. We play in the playoffs and we've won 20 preseason games in a row. And then you actually have to go play, right? I mean, the Ravens have had this attrition and all these injuries and all this stuff. And then here come the Chiefs. So I was fortunate enough to have a Sunday down at home watching games on TV. And then I flew out to Vegas on the business trip Sunday night. But, you know, watching the Bills, watching the Steelers, watching the Chiefs, watching the Browns, watching these very, very good teams get together, and then seeing this depleted version of the Ravens and wondering, how is this going to go against the Chiefs? You and I have been at it a long time. I've whipped you around for at least a decade about how bad your football team's been. And now all of a sudden, you know, those Hard Knocks billboards, I got to pay the piper at this point. So I don't know how this is going to go, but I do know your team's theoretically better than our team, even though we're both looking up at Joe Burrow and Ben Roethlisberger right now.
Well, look, I mean, the Ravens, as you know, you're right in the middle of it. They're just decimated with injuries right now. It's almost reminiscent of the 2008 Browns, where they came off that 10-6 season, just missed the playoffs, and then everybody got hurt in training camp. Season went right down the drain, and everybody got fired, and that really started the wheels turning on the spiral down, downward spiral that the organization went through. Ever since then, at least up until the arrival of Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry's return, of course, from Philadelphia, taken over as the EVP and the GM. So certainly been there, done that, when you go into a season expecting big things and then you just get absolutely crushed and have the rug pulled out from you in training camp in the preseason with a ton of injuries. But because you have a couple Lombardis in the trophy, I have zero sympathy for the Baltimore Ravens or their fans at this point. I would just say, welcome to life in the National Football League. This is what happens every once in a blue moon.
It's been happening on the lake for a quarter of a century here at this point. You know, from the Chiefs' perspective, if we're all chasing them and we're all chasing Tom Brady, and look, all the years, even when you guys sucked and we were in the hall of pretty good of second place of chasing Ben Roethlisberger and playing three playoff games on the road every January, there still was always, well, there's Tom Brady. Well, there, you know, now Patrick Mahomes, I think, has become that in the AFC. Certainly, as I see it, this is the hill that needs to be climbed. The Ravens haven't climbed it well. They sort of regressed last year. And now we see this 3.0 version of the Chiefs, I guess, where they still have enough salary cap room to make this work and have players around. They're still drafting well enough. I think the Browns are a formidable team.
And I got bad news for you. The Browns are using that very same formula right now. So the thought that they were just going to be a one-hit wonder last year with that playoff berth, 11-5 in the regular season, no, I mean, this team is built to be around for a while. So that's what's good from Cleveland's perspective. And you're right. Patrick Mahomes is the standard right now. That's the level Baker Mayfield has to get to. That's Lamar Jackson's been there. He's got an NFL MVP in his trophy case and on the resume, no question about it. He's won a game in January as well, but everybody's chasing Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. They are the odds-on favorite, the two-time defending conference champion. I thought the Browns on Sunday did a pretty good job, and I say this realizing it's a win-loss league. I asked Kevin Stefanski after the game about, do you at least come out of here feeling good about the situation because you did go toe-to-toe with them? He said no, because it is a win-loss league, and the bottom line is the Cleveland Browns are 0-1 right now after losing that game. My argument is that was not the game they needed to win. They got a win in January. So I'm not at all worried or concerned about that loss because of the way the Browns played. I mean, they were throwing haymakers at that Chiefs defense for three quarters.
It felt like two really good football teams in week one that had decent preseason. I mean, we were a mess. We never got our team on the field in the preseason. Defense is out there running around for three games or whatever. But there were teams and games that I felt like were full speed. And then not that the Ravens weren't on Monday night, but it felt like, you know, this was a heavyweight fight in week one, and that's unusual, especially to see it back to back with the Bills and the Steelers as well, because people were pissing on the Steelers all of a sudden. And yeah, if you and I had gotten together last week or last month when I was eating all those crab cakes, Daryl, instead of talking about the Browns in August, right, I was doing all this stuff and have you on now. But if I would have had you on, I would have been all about this. Don't sleep on the Steelers. I was. For 8 months, I have been unburying the Steelers from people who want to bury the Steelers.
Me too. Every year I tend to go into a season where I feel like Pittsburgh's not going to be up to snuff. Then I start talking to people around the league, and then I find out real quick, their rumors of their demise greatly exaggerated. And we saw that on Sunday. I frankly was a little surprised to see them go into Buffalo and come out of there with a win. I thought the Bills were going to win that game because Buffalo, Cleveland, Kansas City, those are the three teams that everyone's talking about going to duke it out for the AFC. I say don't sleep on the Steelers and certainly don't sleep on the Tennessee Titans. But right now, the hierarchy within this division, I put Cleveland 1, Pittsburgh 2, Baltimore 3, and then Cincinnati 4. And I'll be honest with you, when you look at how it played out over the weekend, I think that those rankings are really spot on.
It's where the Ravens are after losing six players, right? Like, yeah, what would the Ravens be if they didn't have Peters, didn't have Dobbins, didn't have Edwards, don't have a right guard, don't have their wide receiver, you know, down the line. And we haven't even started playing yet. I mean, I saw Humphrey out there, you know, gimpy, and I'm thinking, well, I mean, we had the year where Flacco got hurt and everything went wrong, and, you know, they're terrible. The Chiefs, they could play well. They could appoint themselves well on Sunday night to me and still lose by two touchdowns because the Chiefs are that much better than them. And I think the Ravens could answer and have a punch in Lamar could pull some miracles and they could pick a ball or, you know, whatever would happen to keep the game close. But the Ravens haven't been on the level with the Chiefs, and, you know, no offense to Lamar, none taken, vaccine or otherwise. He's exciting. It's all that, but game Patrick Mahomes. And until you start winning some games, coming from behind, doing the things that Mahomes has done on that Brady Rodgers sort of path line, I root for Lamar. Lamar's exciting. But then when it comes time for Lamar to complete a pass on 3rd and 14, maybe not even some through Lamar's fault. I don't know that the whole thing's designed for that right now ever. And based on the way that the tackles played, which was a little bit of a turnstile on Monday night, your three power ranking for the Ravens right now, my purple bleeding heart cannot even argue with that right now, Daryl.
Well, and one thing you're going to see real fast with Patrick Mahomes in this Kansas City offense that I saw on Sunday was they were letting the Browns pass rushers in so that Mahomes could just throw it right over the top of them. And that's part of the Andy Reid scheme with the Chiefs. That's how good they are, that they intentionally allow a little pressure so that they can get behind a defense. You know, the Browns did their best to try and keep things in front. And look, They did an excellent job. I don't think Kevin Stefanski could have coached a better game against the Chiefs Sunday. Okay. The Browns, I'm not making excuses. The Browns lost the game on three plays. Nick Chubb fumbled, which he never does. It cost them 3 points. The punter, Jamie Gillen, couldn't field the long snap, panicked, had time to try and kick it, do a rugby style kick. Didn't work out. Got tackled at the 15. Guess what? You know how the movie ends. If you give Patrick Mahomes the football at the visitor or at the opponent 15 yard line, you just go ahead and put the 7 on the board right away. And then obviously at the very end, Baker Mayfield's interception there, trying to throw the football away. So those three plays, if though, and again, I realize if Spuds, candy and nuts, but if I'm the Browns, I come away from that game knowing that I should have won that game. I can compete with the Chiefs. I belong on the same field with the Chiefs. I'm probably going to see the Chiefs either in the divisional round or the AFC championship game, because look, what the Browns wanted, Nestor, they got offensively. All four touchdown drives were 75 or more yards. Their opening drive chewed up half the quarter, and they just walked right down the field. I love Kevin Stefanski. He went for it on fourth down, not once, but twice. Went for two.
That's a hard ball. I mean, you've been watching the Ravens play that. That's the way we play blackjack in the city now, right?
But that's my point, is from a coaching perspective, there was nothing more Kevin Stefanski could have done to position his team to win that game. They were up by 12 in the second half. And those critical mistakes, if you do not play near perfect football against the Chiefs, you're not going to beat them, because Kansas City, that offense is just that good. Travis Kelce is unstoppable. Tyreek Hill, I'm not even mad the Browns gave up almost 200 yards receiving to him. How do you stop him? So I thought the Browns did an excellent job preparing for the game, coaching the game, just a couple of fine details that they screwed up, and it cost them. And that's how it is when you play those elite teams like the Chiefs. And if you want to be elite, which the Browns feel that they are ready to take that next step to be an elite, they have an elite roster. There's no question about it. But the bottom line is, and I think that was Stefanski's point when he gave me that one word answer to my question about feeling good, going toe to toe and exchanging haymakers with the 2-time defending conference champions. It's a bottom line business. You either win or you lose. You don't get bonus points because you went out there and played well. Objectively, I will say the Cleveland Browns played an excellent football game for but three plays. And those three plays cost them. And come January, they got to eliminate that stuff, or Kansas City's going to send them home for a second straight year. So that's what Baltimore is facing going into this game, is the notion that they're going to have to play near perfect football against Kansas City. And that's hard to do.
Darrell Ryder is here. He is in the land of Cleveland, and the Browns still very much in the belief that they're a contender this year. You can follow Darrell's work out at Right or Wrong Fan out on the interwebs and all things social media. When you talk about mistake-free football and going toe-to-toe with the Chiefs, and you have to be perfect, right?
Yeah.
If you remember the Jedi play, you know, Lamar had him down in Kansas City early on and the Jedi play happened. Then the next year, the Ravens sort of outplayed the Chiefs, still not good enough. And then last year, disaster. And that game was in Baltimore. It would have been fans, wasn't. Nobody was there. It was the weirdness of the beginning of the COVID thing. And now this is going to be fans. And this is a completely diminished version of the Ravens, right? Like, and John Harbaugh doesn't want to hear that. And I'm sure Eric DaCosta, anybody with the team, you'd say, well, they have to go play. And they play. They'll be an underdog. They should be an underdog. I just left Vegas, where you can bet on the games now and get $20 beers and $205 upper deck seats, Darrell Ryder. But
they don't even know when they're supposed to cheer in that stadium, because yeah, Derek Carr, the best part of that
offense at work, they had the big screens, the $1 billion
fans
screens.
Derek Carr's up there having to tell the fans to shut up, and the offensive line's false starting because they can't hear the cadence. I'm just like, Well, they're yeah, the crowd's loud. That's great, but that's not a home field advantage when they won't shut up when the offense is on the field so they can operate.
You know what? We had that problem here, and there was a lot of – like the Baltimore Raiders history, dude. You're an NFL historian. I mean, the 70 championship game goes to the post. The Raiders kicked off the Ravens' existence in 96 here. We go out, kick off their stadium. We beat them here. They beat us there. You know, there's all of this history and all this. Dude, if you ever get out there and see – the way, like, you know, I love Art Modell and you hate Art. We'll go back and forth on all that. But to see Art, to see Al Davis sort of canonized and martyred with his torch, it was like $20 beers. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this league begat? You know,
just but back, win, baby.
Back to the Chiefs. Back to the Chiefs.
Or in Vegas, just drink, baby.
Yeah, anywhere you want. Just go into the drugstore. $2. You don't even need to. I walked into the casino with a Modelo in my hand. I didn't say that on purpose. It really wasn't Modelo. Only had one L. I didn't mean to say Modelo. Just so you know. All right. I'm not trying to honor Norm MacDonald here. You know, to RIP him here by being coy or being too funny.
Excellent
the Chiefs.
Product placement.
Yeah, I do what I can do. But they're not a sponsor. Even though they can be, because I am Hispanic and they should be. The Chiefs and what they do and what and I've called it 3.0, right? They're still getting better. And I would say this because of Andy Reid and my respect for him, the salary cap and the way they've kind of held that thing together there. The beware part shouldn't be this knockdown version of Aaron Rodgers at the end. It's that ascent to say Mahomes has the money. He's got the ring. He's got the girl. He's got all of that. He's got the town and all that. Now it's chasing Tom Brady in the way that Kobe Bryant chased Michael Jordan. And then LeBron's chasing them. And you were a part of all that, that this Mahomes thing seems to be the right guy in the right spot with the right attitude. It doesn't feel heavy to him and like all weird, even when he loses. This feels like they're ramping up over the next 3 or 4 years to get even better. And part of getting better is the Ravens were very good against them last year. I, as a fan, I'm a little concerned about how this is going to go on Sunday night because I don't have good vibes, dude.
Can get ugly against Kansas City because they're just that explosive offensively. I mean, the Browns seem to have things order reestablished there in the second half, and then boom, Tyreek Hill, 75 yards to the house, touchdown, and you're just like, okay, so much for that.
We have Lamar for that, right? Like when things are bad, you know, one weird thing, Lamar's 42 yards and we're in field goal range, and that happens all the. That's what makes him special.
I would say the key to beating Kansas City, besides the whole, you got to play football, you know, perfect football and that, Harbaugh has to stay true to his beliefs as a coach. He, you know, what Andy Reid and the Chiefs try to do is they try and get you out of your comfort zone. And Stefanski kind of turned the tables on him because early in that game, right, Browns score a touchdown. They jump off sides on the PAT. So the Browns then go for two. They get the two. On that drive, they went for it on a fourth down, right? Well, the next drive, the Chiefs have the ball looking to answer. They have a fourth down and Andy Reid kicks the field goal. And I'm thinking, maybe that comes back to bite Andy Reid because you got Stefanski on one end who's playing for touchdowns, but Andy Reid has the luxury. He can play for a field goal because he's not at all worried about his offense being able to jump out in front. I will say this though, Kansas City's defense without Tyrann Mathieu on the field, ooh, night and day difference. And I will acknowledge the Browns benefited from his absence. They were able to get a lot of stuff in the middle of the field. Where does Tyrann Mathieu play? Plays in the middle of the field. Takes a lot of stuff away. So that's something to consider. He was on the COVID list last week, and then they activated him. I think it was on Saturday, officially listed him as questionable. I just didn't think there was any way a guy who was out an entire week and couldn't do much of anything could play, and I ended up being right. He did not play. So Tyrann Mathieu coming back also, I think, complicates things for that Raven offense. So I know you're not optimistic about the game. I would probably share in your pessimism of the Ravens' chances to win the game, but I still think that it's got a potential to be a good game. Anytime I think that the Ravens or Steelers are counted out, They always do what they always do, and that is find a way. So I'm anticipating it to be a pretty good game Sunday night.
You know, it used to be said the Browns are going to brown, but, you know, I'm not here to bury the Cleveland Browns in any way. And certainly this week you talk about Houston, right? And Cincinnati's got Chicago. It didn't look so, you, this thing starts to stack up. And the real concern for the Ravens is 0-2 is the hell of a hole. And that was, and we're playing in Detroit, and then we play in Denver. They feel to be, you know, winnable games, although Denver, right, you know, seems to be formidable. And, you know, and certainly on the road, all of that, right? And we play like the whole month at home. We play the Colts. We play the Chargers. We play these kinds of teams that, like, I don't know what to make of them as to whether they're any good. But I'm very concerned we're not as good as I thought we were all off season. And not just what my eyes saw, because to your point, ifs and buts, the Ravens had the game won with 30 seconds left. I mean, Tucker came out, did what Tucker does. Then they snatch life on the interception out of the jaws of defeat. And all of a sudden, this is
the Ravens made. I'll tell you the mistake the Ravens made. They kicked the ball out of the end zone for a touchback after taking the lead, instead of kicking it short of the goal line and forcing a return, thereby taking some of those precious seconds remaining off the clock and giving Derek Carr even less time. Had the Raiders been forced to return that kickoff, game's over in regulation and the Ravens would have won. That was the mistake the Ravens made. It's a detail of the game where special teams coordinators got to say to the kicker, that ball doesn't cross the goal line. You want to squib kick it, pop it up, whatever you want to do, you absolutely must force the Raiders to return it and chew time off the clock and trust that your coverage unit is going to get down there, box the guy in, and get him down before he's able to leak out and come away with an explosive return and provide the Raiders with some really good field position. I thought that when you go back and you look at the sequence of events, I thought that was the defining moment for the Ravens as far as a mistake that potentially cost them the game. And instead, Carr was able to get them into field goal range and force the overtime.
Some would say the fumble. I mean, look.
But even after that, but I'm just saying, though, that if that one thing happened, okay, to take another 5, 6, 7 seconds off of a return, guess what? They don't have the ability to put the field goal unit on the on the field to tie the game. That's my whole point, is that one little detail cost Baltimore in that game Monday night.
Well, it was that close to being 1-0 in the same way that you guys feel like chasing the Chiefs. Darryl Ryder is here. He's from the land of Cleveland. You're still watching baseball there. You're watching basketball. Like, what's going on? Ohio State, what's going on?
Oh, in Cleveland?
Because I'm still 3 months away from having breakfast with you.
Bad weekend for Ohio State. Don't even want to talk about it. Baseball-wise, the Guardians-to-be are just kind of playing out the string here. They're just trying to get as healthy as they can toward the end of the season.
Oh, my God, I called them the Indians. I just realized, did I call them the Indians?
They're still the Indians until the season's over, so you're still grammatically
correct. I swear to you on my life, and this is – I swear to you, if you would have just said to me, what's the Indians' new name –
you had no idea. Yeah. It's okay.
I kind of forgot, man. Like, the Indians are changing their name. That's a lead story. I can't believe I saved this to the end. I should have led with this.
I call them the bridge sculptures because that's what they're named after. The guardians of traffic outside of Progressive Field. And also the whole, you know, the young.
Yeah. Are those like gargoyles?
Yeah. No. Yeah. You've seen them. The big Hope Memorial Bridge that goes across the river there outside the ballpark. Those big tall pillars, four of them on each end of the bridge. Those are called the Guardians of
Traffic. Not far from where Drew Carey did
Yeah. So, okay. And then again, you rip on Cleveland. We're going to come after you. We're very protective of our hometown, just as you are in Baltimore, and as we all should be. We, you know, so
when do I rip on Cleveland?
I didn't say you specifically.
The Browns, I rip on, but not Cleveland.
I'm speaking in generalities here, Nestor. Not everything's about you. Believe it or not.
And there's been girls, food, drinks, good times, concerts.
I'm already on to next season when it comes to the I call them the guardians to be now, just because it's like, if you're going to change the name, then, I'm not.
Are you really bummed? I mean,
yeah, well, I understand why they did it. And I certainly respect the objections to the name Indians. I'm of the belief if the Braves don't need to change their name, or the Blackhawks or the Seminoles can do something with the Native American community to allow for the honoring and continuance of the name. I felt like the Indians could have done something in that regard. But I also understand, I've talked to a lot of the stakeholders in this, and their thinking was, look, it's a polarizing issue. And we don't want to be polarizing, certainly not in this climate. By changing the name to Guardians, we can really market it better. We can have a lot more fun now. We don't have to worry about protests outside our ballpark on opening day, or anytime we're on national TV, or anytime we're in the playoffs.
Major League comes on TV and Chief Wahoo's on every hat.
So I understand that aspect of it. I just wish they had a longer runway, Nestor, to put together the logo package and the redesign for uniforms and stuff like that. Because I'll be honest with you, the new look looks like a 13-year-old went on Photoshop and just slapped something together. And again, they were very limited. Like, it was about a month between they decided the name was going to be Guardians. They got all the legal clearances they felt that they needed to get taken care of so they could do it. But man, just I think that the concepts that they could have come up with, infinitely better than what they actually presented. And I have talked to people that expect in the coming years that the branding is going to evolve and stuff like that. As far
who picked the name?
Well, it was a collective within the organization. They started out with nearly 2,000 names, just under 2,000 names, and they pared it down. Walleye was one of the finalists. Spiders was a finalist, but they had some trademarking issues, so they passed on that. Blues, I think, was in consideration. There were a couple other ones.
Yeah, we had names when the Ravens came. It was, you know, Mavericks, Mustangs, Bombers. Like, right. There were names. Ravens was, like, always sort of at the front of school. But the Guardians, Barbara Sun, like, did a thing. You know, back when papers were papers, you know, there was a pick the name. It was fun. You know, it was fan-oriented.
Back in January, about a month after they announced they were going to follow through with changing the name of the franchise, I my gut told me it was going to be Guardians. And the funny thing is, my sister was in town with her family for vacation. We're going all around Cleveland, that I'm showing her the sights and whatnot. And so we're driving over the bridge. I go, hey, everybody, you see those big statues up there? That's what our baseball team is going to be next year. Let me introduce you to the Cleveland Guardians. And then a month later, the video comes out narrated by the great Tom Hanks. And voila, there they are, the Cleveland Guardians.
He is their writer. He is Right or Wrong Fan. He is in the land of Cleve watching, like us, disappointing week one football. But they're back after it this week. How about them Houston Texans, huh? You know, how many draft picks are they going to get for their quarterback? I mean, what a mess.
Yeah,
like, right?
It really is. And I like it. Certainly, little homerism here, but I think the Browns are going to roll on Sunday. First of all, they're not feeling very good coming off that loss to Kansas City. They really want to assert themselves with authority. It's their home opener. Listen, the Houston Texans beat Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are going to be in running for the number one pick in the draft again next year, right? The Jaguars are where the Browns were 3-4 years ago. That and who knows how long Urban Meyer is going to want to stay in Jacksonville as well, especially because the USC job magically came up. You want to talk about bad timing to take your next head coaching job, right? Urban jumps on the Jags, and then USC comes open, you know, less than a month into his regular season tenure.
You're not anti-Urban Meyer, are you?
I'm not a fan. I think that it's already been a dumpster fire in Jacksonville. I mean, look, one of the first things he did was hire the racist strength and conditioning coach. I think he's going to learn real fast, if he hasn't already. He can't run the Jacksonville Jaguars like he used to run the Florida Gators and the
Ohio State. Coach learned that 20 years ago, didn't he? And so did Saban, like all those guys, right?
Saban went back to college.
Right.
Not many. I mean, Pete Carroll is really let's be honest about it. He's the exception to the rule. Not many guys go from the college ranks, come to the, I mean, look, Chip Kelly had a cup of coffee in Philadelphia. He ended up blowing up what was there and left the place in shambles when they finally got wise and threw him out the door. Now he's, you know, back in the, you know, college ranks and stuff. So I just, I think that it's extremely hard because it is, it's two different environments, college versus the pros. In the pros, you're dealing with grown men, a lot of whom make a lot more money than you do. And you just, you can't run, you can't try and run your program like a college. Now I will give him, I will give Urban a piece of credit, something he did that I absolutely loved. And that was how he revealed the captains. He had the family members of each of the players record a video. And then, you know, they played the video.
Very collegiate.
No, but I thought that was a really cool, awesome thing to do. But he's in for a rude awakening. I give him till the second week of October before he's just ready to go back to college.
Daryl, you know, I love having you on the show. And I've just, when I look down, I'm like, we're playing the Chiefs. I want to go to Cleveland. You know, I want to like have a little insight into the Chiefs on short week because we were so focused on the Raiders. And I didn't even realize like all off season that you guys opened against the Chiefs. It took me till about 10 days ago to realize like, oh, wow. Oh, really? You know, maybe they'll be 0-1 and they are. Maybe we'll be 0-1 and we are.
I did pick the Browns to lose that game. I had them starting 0-1, and then I've got them just losing three more times the rest of the way.
All right. Well, follow along, Right or Wrong Fan. He is Daryl Reiter, R-U-I-T-E-R. You can find him out at The Fan and Cleveland and the Guardians. When I began this conversation, I just was thinking, how about those Indians? And I guess that's the last time I'm ever going to be able to say that again. So I just did. I'm still working on cleaning up the R word, getting the R out down in D.C., you know.
Yeah, well, I actually, true story, the last about 5-6 years ago, I made a personal editorial decision that I would not write the team name. I would just, when I had to write.
I remember this with, yeah. Okay.
A
lot of Washington football people did the same thing. Yeah.
Right. I just would write Washington. And just because that particular name was, I totally got the offensiveness of that name. Cause you were talking about a specific skin color of a human being. So I tried years ago to eliminate that from my vocabulary, both in print on the interwebs and as well as speaking. The Indians is a little tougher for me just because of the muscle memory and saying it every single day. It's going to be interesting to see how many Freudian slips are going to come out.
I'm older than you, and I struggle with this with the Washington football team.
Yeah, well,
now I like saying Washington football team because it intimates how effed up they are. You know what I mean? Like it just, when you say Washington, when you say WFT, you think WTF.
I'm really curious to see what name they choose. It was interesting. I read the Washington Post article where they just heaped platitudes over on the Indians organization for how they handled the name change and praised the new name Guardians. And
Indians have done such a good job with it that I didn't even know they did it. I've forgotten, you know.
And you know what? And that's the other shame of it too, is because they tried to, I think, like the announcement, Nestor, I kid you not, the night before, and it was funny, I'm at the ballpark and I see Paul Hoynes, Cleveland.com beat reporter.
Love Paul, man. Legend.
He posts a story. Hey, the Indians have picked their new name. So they have decided on it. They are ready to announce it. The only question is, when are they going to announce it? And I don't even think the Indians wanted to announce it when they did, but they realized that it was about to get out. So I started having some fun on Twitter, and the first name I said, so I was covering the game that night, and every time I did a scoring update, I picked a new name. So the first name I picked was Guardians. So the first three innings, I called them the Guardians. And then the second three innings, I went to the Spiders. And then the third three innings, I went to the Blues. And just to have some fun with it. Cause again, I felt
you now have recorded the first Guardian, you know, you can say right. I was in there first.
But that I just, my gut told me the name was going to be Guardians. And then the announcement was the next morning, Friday morning at about, I want to say 9:30, 10 o'clock. And it was just the team posted the Tom Hanks 2-minute video on Twitter. That was their announcement. Like there was no in advance rollout or, you know what I'm saying? Like it was just boom, here it is. And so it hits you like a ton of bricks because you're just sitting there like, whoa, cool video.
Now what do we do?
And you're processing in your head, okay, the team name's the Guardians, Cleveland Guardians. They're the Cleveland, and you're just processing that for a second. And then, you know, a little bit later, you get the official artwork of what the jerseys are going to look like. And here's the primary logo, the secondary. Here's our new word mark. Yeah, they don't even know if they can fit Guardians up above the scoreboard. You know, the famous Indian sign that's above
it's
that.
It's still thing. Going better than the Chargers thing to LA. You know, I mean, it's still going better than that.
Yeah, but you know what? They brought back the Powder Blues in LA, so they get credit for that. Those are some of the best uniforms you'll see in football.
Too bad they don't have any fans.
Charger Powder Blues. No, they don't. And that's the shame. Like, they are, that's the amazing thing about both them and the Rams. They are in a city that doesn't even want them. Let's be honest about it. I realize the Rams, they spent billions upon billions to build that stadium out there, and the NFL Network has moved their complex to Stan Kroenkeville and all that. But let's be honest about it. Los Angeles could really care less about the NFL unless you have superstars, big personalities, and you win. Because LA is a trend. It's a Dodger town. It's a late
town. They were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, dude. And they jettisoned the quarterback.
I understand that. But that's why do you think they traded all their draft picks? Like, they haven't picked in the first round of the draft since I don't think the Cleveland Browns were even in the league again. It's been that long. Like, it's a record how many years that the Rams have not picked in the first round in the draft. But yeah, they're in a city that does not want them. And I predict that the Chargers at some point in the next, I don't know, 10 years, maybe 15, depending, you know, how the lease is written or whatever, I think the Chargers will be moving once again. Will it be back to San Diego? Will it be back, you know, will it be to another?
We'll be back to San Diego. Didn't have a stadium, dude. They imploded it. I had Stones tickets at the Murph on my app. And then I'm on the internet in the middle of the COVID and they imploded it.
Well, maybe they'll play at Petco Park or something. What? No, it's not Petco Park.
Piece of my heart as well after the Holiday Bowl. You
know? Or maybe they'll play at San Diego State University. I don't know. It's interesting that you got two teams in a market that just really, like I said, you got to be on track.
London Chargers, London,
Jacksonville is soon to be, what? Let's see. You got London. What's the other city out there that the NFL?
Frankfurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I say it's going to be the Frankfurt Chargers and the London Jaguars.
Jaguars. He is in Cleveland. He is Daryl Ryder. He is Right or Wrong Fan. He'll be chronicling all things Texans this weekend and is always good enough and gracious enough to spend a little time talking football. It's good to see you. It's good to be seen. I'm sorry we're not hanging out at meetings and combines and all that, but I am booked into Cleveland Christmas time. I love coming for the Christmas story time. So,
by the way, they cut the big tree outside of the Christmas story house. They had to cut it down. It was rotting and was about to fall down, so they had to chop it down.
Wow. Hope it doesn't affect the gift store.
No, gift store is still there, and my sister may or may not have maxed out her credit card. Sources can neither confirm nor deny.
It's a pink nightmare, no doubt about it. I'll see you in Tremont in December, brother. Thanks for coming on.
Sounds good.
My dude, Daryl Ryder, there he goes, Right or Wrong Fan. You can find him out at 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland and chronicling the Browns and now the Guardians journey and the Cavaliers. We forgot about them after they won those titles. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop the wise conversations and Baltimore positive here and crab cakes all week.